Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Identity Refreshing!
This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're here in studio with Michael Caron. He's a former commissioner of Pura, so we're happy to have Michael here. Morning, Michael.
Morning. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Good and, to see you guys again.
Yeah. Yeah, you too. And we have Ziggy, of course, our artificial intelligence, who seems to always clam up when I ask him a question, or it a question. So we'll see how Ziggy does with this test here. But we also have on the line here Kim, who's got a question. We're going to finish up before we go to Michael and talk about electricity and what we do or do not know how to run in Connecticut. But let's go to Kim real quick here in Bloomfield. Do you have another question on your email?
Yeah, I just wanted to know what it was basically just on my phone, why I can't move it to a mailbox. Like, it doesn't recognize, like, usually when you,
You're breaking up there, Kim.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're back. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. It'll just go, it'll want to go to CVS, or it won't. It's basically on my phone, so I can do it on my iPad, and it eventually shows up on my laptop. But it's just weird that I just can't. I think it's still something about to do with the AT&T mailboxes, if that's possible. Like, it doesn't want to move from my phone.
Well, it shouldn't. The word "move" is maybe the wrong word you're using. So like Dennis mentioned, if you set up your account as an IMAP account and you have the same Outlook.com on any devices, and they're set up the same way, your email should be received the way you'd want it to be received on any device, not moved per se. It just comes down and synchronizes and does its thing.
Each device is looking at the same mailbox data that's sitting out on the server.
And if they're not configured to IMAP, it can get really funky.
Right. And that's when you get the multiples getting downloaded and all that stuff.
So go to each device. Go to each device and follow the information we posted on Infinity's IMAP config.
Right. And one thing I wanted to say is the reason it probably looks right on the iPad is because the iPad, I don't even think, is capable of POP. I think it can only connect with IMAP. So you're seeing everything right the way that it is in the mailbox on the server.
Right.
But on your other devices, it doesn't necessarily match up because of the protocol you're using. But we posted an article from Xfinity about how to set it up, and it tells you how to do IMAP. It assumes that that's what you want. So that'll be perfect.
Thank you.
You got it, Kim.
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Thanks. Yeah, have a good weekend.
You too. Bye. All right, so we've got Michael Caron. He's joined us many times, former Commissioner Pura here in studio. I can kind of see him through the all the stuff we have in the studio here. But it's good to see you, Michael.
Yeah, we're face, half face to half face.
Yes. I'm blocked by monitors. So
and cameras.
Dennis, I get the full view.
The full view.
Monty here.
You spent how many years at Pura?
About 13 and a half.
13 and a half. And that group is designed out there to try to help regulate the electricity industries here, or any kind of utility here in Connecticut, right? Whether it be gas, water, power, internet.
Gas, water, electricity, the public right of way. So we don't regulate telecommunications companies, but they use the public right of way. So they have to go through us to get permission and you know, apply, do an application,
right,
to put up like the small cell deployments and the broadband wire.
Gotcha. So you've been involved in this for a very long time, and we're still dealing here in Connecticut with like the highest electricity prices in this in the nation. And we have some big bills coming due that we kind of touched on before, last time you were here, that I want to touch on further, because it still bothers me, because you brought this up that we have these storms that happened 10 years ago, right?
2018.
All right. Not
so
not
close,
quite.
But yeah. Yeah, it's adding up. I lose track that it's 2026.
Yeah. Right. We haven't paid for them. We keep kicking it down the road, and we're paying a carrying cost that we're keep chucking at Eversource because we haven't paid them back for the storms, correct?
That's correct.
How much are we waiting on? How much is outstanding that we owe them? Do you know?
My recollection is for the – there were two sets. One was before 2025. That was about $1.6 billion.
Billion with a B.
Correct. Oh. Yeah. And it was something in the neighborhood of – a dozen storms,
mm-hmm.
And they went over the threshold of what would be considered, you know, normal storms,
yeah,
or ordinary storms. They were extraordinary storms, sometimes catastrophic storms.
Mm-hmm.
So those were added in. And again, many people remember the history of the authority and its interactions with the utilities over the past 5 years. You'll remember that there was a lot of friction, let's say, and tension,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
and disagreement about how to regulate, and obviously we've seen that that's been cleared up by the authority so far. So, but yeah, to your point, so now I think the current docket, storm docket, is going through 2018 through 2025, and it's probably more than 13 storms now.
That we haven't paid for.
Haven't paid for, but it's in the proceeding.
All right.
Well, after the proceedings, they go by a schedule,
yeah.
And it's due process. And it goes through the Uniform Administrative Procedures Act that all regulatory agencies follow.
Gotcha.
So it's just a question of time. But they are going through it. And usually what happens with these storms is a company would come in for a rate case, and that's headphones, yeah. Jumped off.
Yeah.
They would come in for a rate case, and then we go through the prudency of all the costs they incurred and
yeah.
their actions during the storm. And presuming they were all prudent, they'd recover the costs and rates at some point. Going further, but that would be in the new rate case, because
that's what scares me.
Well, and Eversource just filed a rate case. I think it was the end of 2025, just before I left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been getting started, but I think they bifurcated that with the previous storm cost recovery docket,
mm-hmm.
and some new. There may be some new storms that will be included in the ultimate rate case, which will probably be concluded. It's like 350 days, so that would take us to the end of the summer, I think.
Okay. And again, we're paying a carrying cost of like $50 million. Is it a monthly cost, annual cost? It was.
I think it's monthly.
Like, and is it $50 million?
I think. I can't recall.
I'm trying to do it for my record. It's a big chunk of money.
Yeah, it's been over 6 months since I've seen the numbers come through.
I know.
I haven't been paying as close attention as
yeah,
I used to.
Yeah, you've been just gallivanting across the country, but that's okay.
Indeed.
It's okay. So it's a big chunk of money we're paying just to the carrying costs for bills we haven't paid originally.
Yeah, and again, because of the dynamics between the utilities and the authority over the past 5 years, they avoided coming in for a rate case to address those storm costs. And
they being the utility?
They being the Eversource.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to come in for a rate case.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous chair was trying to force them to come in to a rate case by not addressing the storm costs in a separate docket, which they had requested.
Gotcha. So that caused a bit of a kerfuffle, and here we are.
And here we are.
And we have this time bomb.
The battle of wills.
Yeah, we have this time bomb. So Dennis and I were talking about this, and I talked about this too. We're the insurance capital of the planet. So, yeah. Supposedly.
Used to be anyway.
Yeah, used to be anyway.
I hope we still are.
I hope so too. Why can't we figure out how to do a stop-loss type of approach to insure, having Eversource insure themselves, right? It's, why is it the ratepayer's job to insure the utility for a storm? Because when TAB doesn't have any kind of ability to do that, we have to have insurance. We have to make sure we're prepared for a hurricane, a flood, something catastrophic. Why is it a utility doesn't do that? Can you give us some understanding as to why that would be the case?
Sure. In terms of self-insuring, that would be the ratepayer insuring anyway, because they would have to take that out of rates.
You're right.
And self-insure themselves.
Yeah.
And then a storm would come and they'd pay for it out of that. Or a storm wouldn't come and they still wouldn't pay for it. So now you have money just laying around, sort of like unused inventory.
Right.
So the ratepayers would be paying for it at any rate,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to once a storm has passed, new rate case. And of course, rate cases are generally 4, 5, 6 years apart.
Right.
Statutorily 4 years, but agreement by all the parties, they don't have to come in if they don't need to. And then at the next rate case, they would recoup that money anyway.
If it happens in a normal
process.
If
it happens as normal storms, but you get like ICES and then, or Superstorm Sandy or something of that magnitude. And there are a couple of those, and they always seem to come in bunches, right? You have long lags and then you have all at once.
Right. The October snowstorm happened so far back now, we all forgot about it. Everyone's got generators. Well, everyone's got generators they haven't used.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a good way to put it. So you put all this money out, you're at it, and the thing's resting there in the backyard because you haven't had to use it.
Yes and no. So we've got this big rate case that's going to happen. We've got to pay these old bills, right? And mm-hmm. and as a rate payer, we can't handle big increases, right, in costs. We already are the number one most expensive gold-plated electricity we've got on the planet, and now we have to figure out how to pay for these extraordinary costs.
Yeah,
yeah. I would contend that someone actuarially, we have more actuarials in Connecticut per square foot than any other state, right? and some actuarial would say, "Hey, guys, if we had just put a few bucks per ratepayer aside over the time to plan for, guess what? I'm not the sharpest tack, but I could plan for a storm like this." Right, we'd have been hearing from Al Gore about the we're going to be underwater in 20 years. So I mean, somebody could have planned. Yeah, I know somebody could have planned for a bad storm where you actually insure it, put some money aside. Yes, it's not doing anything, but you could invest it somewhere else. As long as you're not investing in something stupid like Bernie Madoff, you can actually then apply the money you've put aside because you're smart and you understand what a rainy day is as Eversource, not you with Pura, but you would think Pura would require the actual utility to be ready for that. Why are we always are victims of what's going on? We seem to be just impacted rather than planned for.
So I don't want to say it's not planned for. They utilities plan a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
They have lots of planning. It's very complex. And I've told you about the books of the applications. They're literally a couple feet high.
Yes.
So they do a lot of planning. They do set some money aside for relatively small storms. Mostly for being prepared mm-hmm. and some cleanup.
Yeah.
But we have looked at this before at the authority, and it's been brought up, and the utilities have offered many times to try and, to your point, put some money away for a rainy day.
Yeah.
But again, the authority has determined that that's not a wise use of ratepayer money as opposed to just paying for the storm after the storms came through. And again, this was a little extraordinary in that Eversource stayed out for such a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, they're getting paid anyways. They're getting that carrying cost. So it's like...
Or they're not getting paid for it until they get paid for it.
Right.
There is a regulatory lag. And investors that tend to fund the utilities, they don't like that either.
No.
So, and neither does anyone. No one likes to be held in arrears for, months at a time when you're, net 30.
No, it's not good.
And then there's net 90 or net 9 years. It adds up.
So I guess the question I have, so you guys as a regulatory authority had decided that. Do other states work the same way, or could we find other regulatory authorities that do recommend that the actual utility insure itself?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure of the answer.
See, that's the kind of crap I ask all the time.
Well, you asked, last time I was here, you asked about the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, NARUC.
Yeah.
And
don't you guys get together and talk about this?
We get together. But, there's something like 12 committees, different committees that regulators sit on. You can only be on two. At a time. So they're all diffused and dispersed.
Yeah.
We've been spending, NARUC has been spending the past few years a lot of time on forest fires, on wildfires,
yeah.
especially out west. But then we saw we had wildfire out here, what was it, year before last.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in, was it Plainville?
Something like that. Yeah, a Berlin Mountain. That was
Berlin area somewhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The ones from Canada. So that's been a focus of a lot of the regulators in terms of extraordinary events, gotcha. Similar to a storm.
Right.
You don't know. It's not a question of if, it's when.
Exactly. We're going to speak more with Michael Caron, from a former commissioner of PURA, who is nice enough to come in here and chat with us about these topics, because we don't know how electricity works here in Connecticut, obviously, because we pay the highest rates in the nation, and we are the smartest state in the nation. Per capita, we've got the smartest engineers, the most educated people on the planet. We have got everything you could ask for as far as universities and what have you, yet here we find ourselves.
Here we find ourselves.
And that's what I don't get. We're going to talk more about it. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and we're talking with Michael Caron about electricity. And I asked him the question, if we finally have a PURA now that actually has all the seats filled.
All the seats are filled, all five.
That's great. How long was it? You were on the commission for 13 years. How long did it go without those five seats filled?
I want to say probably 2018 or 19-ish.
It was the last time that was full?
Well, it was three. We were authorized for three.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
The legislature changed the makeup to go back to five.
Gotcha.
When was that? That was during the transition from Malloy to Governor Lamont.
Gotcha.
So the authorized for five. There was back and forth whether you needed three or five. Most commissions across the nation, the country, have three.
Really?
Yeah.
But there was some sort of controversy with the chair actually making these decisions on her own.
Right.
And that's now by having five, the quorum changes.
Right. Yes.
So that problem might be solved.
Yes.
To an extent. So that's good. We'll see how that goes.
Worked that out after in the new after September.
Okay.
We the new chair, Tom Wheel, started literally polling the remaining members, and it were 1, 2, 3, 4 of us at that time. Which docs they each one wanted to sit on, and which one wanted to lead them.
Gotcha.
So I went back to each commissioner has a chance to lead various set of dockets, and with a panel of three, and they would name the three.
Gotcha.
So based on the lawsuit from the utilities, all that is transparent right up there. It's done every Wednesday on their, what we call our commissioners meeting, where we take votes on the dockets as well as who's going to be assigned to which docket.
Gotcha. Well, let's see if that process now gets improved. going forward. Nobody's pointing fingers at, you know.
I think it won't. I think the mantra after the end of the year before I left was, let's just get back to boring old rate making.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they're headed.
And so as a rate payer, that's what we like, boring old. just give us a minor. We understand it's going to increase, right? Everything goes up, but nothing crazy is what we're dealing with. So,
and again, that's a principle of rate making as well, is to not have rate shock.
Right.
And again, going back to the storm costs, that's going to be kind of rate shocky. So I think the legislature is allowing the utilities to go out and bond that, the cost of the securitization. So I don't think it's all going to be on the ratepayer back. And again, I've been out for a while, over 6 months, and I've been paying so much attention to it as much.
But that's an idea. So you're telling me they might have bonded the cost.
Or will.
And then when you say bonded, is it a state bond or is it a bond that anybody can buy, a corporate bond? Are we paying it as taxpayers? Is it a taxpayer kind of bond or is it
Eversource issuing the bond and then?
Yeah, I think it's Eversource issuing the bond.
All right. And financing it themselves.
Through investors, through the investor community.
All right.
Well, if they're going to get cool with that, then let's just sell some self-insurance bonds for this in the future, and we call it a day.
Smarter financial minds than mine are going to have to tackle that one.
And me too. What do I know?
By the way, you could make a request to the authority that you'd like to request they open a docket to look into self-insurance or financing.
Anybody can do that?
Sure.
Really?
Whoa.
I didn't know we had the power to do that.
Wow.
Or call your legislators and ask them to make a request. You could do that as well.
Well, we could try that. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. Well, we're going to be here till 11 o'clock.
Year.
What?
It's an election year.
It is like, whatever.
That's your moment.
That's true. Nobody cares about Eric. We're going to step out for a quick break. Get back to your calls. I'll be right back. All right. We are back. And we are talking electricity here with Michael Caron, from a former commissioner of PURA. Spent 13 years of his life regulating electricity and all sorts of stuff. Gosh, that had to be painful with the stacks of regulations you had to go through. But we were talking a little bit about nuclear power, right? So we had a story recently where some insider trader, Constellation, made like $1.4 million because of the Microsoft deal. And of course, SEC is taking them down. Rightly so.
Rightly so.
And you've got these data centers that are power hungry, right? And
right.
We're all worried as ratepayers. We appreciate data centers. I got Ziggy here, who's not listening much, but he's sitting there waiting to answer our questions. But we want AI to be a thing. We want data centers to be a thing, and we need to power them. And so we talked about a little bit of nuclear power, and you're talking about this small modular stuff that's out there, right?
Yes.
That's coming.
That is – I'm pretty sure it's coming.
Yeah.
And so my understanding is there are 42 different small modular reactor developers. I think that's worldwide.
Okay.
And probably maybe not half, around half, 40-50% of in the U.S.
Yep.
And there are 48 different designs. So in China and South Korea, who are kind of leading the pack in nuclear construction, mm-hmm. and they're doing, like China has a model based on the Westinghouse AP1000, which is 1,000 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
The two new nuclear plants in Georgia, Vogtle 3 and 4, are AP1000s.
Neat.
So those are big ones. But small modulars are anything, and what they call advanced microreactors, are anything from literally less than a megawatt to, I represent a company that is developing an integral molten salt reactor, which will be 390 megawatts electric.
Wow.
But it can also generate about 585 degrees of industrial quality heat as well.
So they can get
so
some steam.
Use. So
some,
it's exactly.
Yeah.
And you could power a brand new industrial plant. Mm-hmm. And while the reactors going forward won't necessarily reduce electric prices, what they will do is provide reliable baseload power that makes it stable.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer a price is stable, the sooner it becomes affordable.
Right.
And it pushes the volatility that we deal with now further and further out, whether it's part-time power of renewables or the volatility of gas supply.
Right, and we have a nuclear power plant here that we're dealing with as far as the public benefits charge, right? That's
right.
Right.
Is it Millstone?
Millstone.
Millstone.
Millstone Waterford, yep.
And for some reason, that's costing us more than it should. And these new small modulars could stabilize that out. Nobody seems to want to get a natural gas pipeline in here for all the tea in China. So that's not happening, right? And we, you know, what's her name up there? Healy is proud of canceling multiple pipelines.
As Governor Hochul in New York as well.
Yeah. So we're not going to get more resources there. So this would be a good alternative. Now, I've read, though, and we've had some energy experts on here talking about the flywheel effect of this pulsing. It's a megahertz pulsing of the electric grid. It's 60 hertz, yeah. And which is kind of a cool thing, right? But these battery technologies don't produce the hertz pulsing. So if you do have some sort of cascading outage like they had in Portugal, where the entire Spain and Portugal went out on a nice sunny day because something happened with that megahertz pulsing
fluctuation, right.
That because they didn't have enough flywheels of actual, you know, generation, the old fashioned way of spinning turbines, that they cascaded to a failure. Do these small module technologies offer that pulsing somehow? I mean, that's what I'm hearing is the big a drawback. If we put this great technology in with batteries, you lose that pulse and you could have a catastrophic problem rather fast.
Well, a small mods essentially will work as, you know, large mods.
Okay.
So they will still be spinning magnets around copper. And so you'll have the mechanical inertia.
You will. Okay. Yeah. Except when the batteries kick in and do the offsetting, as you just described, when there's a lag somewhere, the batteries kick in
right.
to offset it. The batteries don't produce that.
No. And no, but... But again, if you're predominantly, again, the Iberian incident, predominantly using the solar power,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden the clouds come in and the voltage drops off. Like you said, there's no inertial momentum.
Right. We can't lose sight of that.
Because you have to create your product as soon as the demand is right there.
Right.
And that's what that fluctuation is. You know, once we turn the lights out here at the studio, there's a fluctuation. Right. Unless somebody else turns something else on back in West Hartford.
Right. It's an interesting problem. I also heard in the news, maybe you heard it, maybe you hadn't, that there's some sort of discussion of pausing the public benefits charge coming up in July. Do you know anything about that? Have you heard anything about that?
I don't personally. Okay. Again, I was away
seeing
the country. Beautiful country. If you ever get a chance to drive around the Blue Ridge Parkway, for instance, or we went out to Mount Rushmore in South Dakota, just extraordinary beauty throughout the nation.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, so I really haven't heard, but it, and I'm just speculating, but it sounds like it's an idea to, when electricity usage is highest in the summer, July, mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. August, to reduce the burden for that moment and right. ultimately pay it back in the shoulder months, which are the autumn months going into December.
So again, if it does happen to go away, we're going to pay for it. And it'll probably at a higher cost because you're going to have more carrying costs, because because you didn't pay for it in July doesn't mean that cost goes away. So you're going to have an increased cost when it comes back in the fall, if that happens.
And of course, there's also, we talked about the rate case that Eversource has pending currently. There may be a settlement with the Office of Consumer Counsel, Attorney General's office, and the utility at some point, and they may address that.
Gotcha.
It's something that can be addressed. The authority doesn't participate in the actual negotiations for settlements, but they review it after it's all taken care of.
Gotcha. Now, as part of being on the authority, when you guys dealt with the public benefits charge, because that's added a lot of cost, or at least we can now see it. It's probably been there forever. Dealing with the green energy requirements, the windmills, the infrastructure to manage the windmills, the solar. Heck, I just saw East Windsor is screaming because they're like the solar capital of Connecticut. They're getting cranky about everyone using up all their land for solar farms. When you guys got involved in rate cases, how do you guys balance that public benefits policy issue? Or do you guys just have to follow whatever's there and just it's just in the background? Is there any power you have over those things to go back to the legislators and say, hey, guys, you know what this is going to do or no?
No, it's statutory. And,
oh, boy.
And we are a creature of statutory language
mm-hmm.
And are bound to follow the language of the legislation or the bill.
And that's why I want to make sure people understand that. PURE is just doing. So when the legislators make PURE the bad guy, it's really ridiculous.
Well, it's by design.
I know it is. And we need to understand that PURE
But it goes back to the 19th century with the railroads.
Oh.
Railroad commissions were created to regulate the railroads.
Yeah.
And because I'm presuming that certain constituents were angry at the rates they were paying the railroads mm-hmm. and wanted their legislators to do something about it. And that's a lose-lose for somebody who has to get elected every 2 years. So they created a commission to keep an eye on things and make the tough decisions that had to be made.
Yeah.
And yet not cripple the utility of a railroad or an electricity grid, so on and so forth.
But again, you guys take the blame for the legislative actions that you have to apply.
Yeah, but again, the things we have to apply has to be built on a book of evidence or on a body of evidence.
Yep.
And that's why it takes so long. For electric rate cases, it's I think it's 350 days.
Yeah.
Water cases are something like 280, something like that.
Gotcha.
So the case has to be made and has to stand scrutiny of the courts. And as we saw recently in a couple of rate cases from last year, the courts remanded some of those decisions back to the authority to redress some of the issues that they felt they didn't follow the evidence, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And those were addressed.
Gotcha.
So the regulatory authority has the utility has the burden of proof to show why these costs are prudent, needed, necessary for a safe, reliable system at least cost.
Yeah.
And the and regulatory body has to determine, did they make the case or did other interveners, like the Office of Consumer Counsel, make a better case?
Gotcha.
And that has to stand up to scrutiny in court.
So it makes your hair hurt.
It certainly does.
It's that least cost issue there, because it's clearly not least cost in Connecticut. What are we doing wrong?
Well, we happen to be at the end of every supply chain.
Yeah,
we have one of the strongest social safety nets in the nation. We have very strong labor laws, and we have strong climate policies.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things start adding up, and it's an evolution of things. You end up being the frog, like, what the heck? I'm boiling.
Yeah, the affordability. Everyone talks about affordability and affordability and affordability, and we have those great things, the social safety nets and what have you, and the labor unions. That's great, but nobody can afford to buy an apartment in Connecticut, and then let alone heat it or cool it. It's ridiculous.
And it comes back to the basic economics of supply and demand.
Right.
If your price is going up, you don't have enough supply. And if you have too much supply, price drops, investors go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Or so where's the balance, you know, in the old graph in economics where the demand crosses the supply.
Right.
And find that equilibrium.
It's your point easy. Is simply there's not enough supply. That's why our prices. And that's what the whole back to the natural gas scenario that we just talked about.
And go back to the the nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
Once those start getting developed by the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th one, you're going to see a real serious stabilization of the construction cost and a reduction in the financing cost. The financing component of construction of nuclear is the largest component in getting these things up and running.
Gotcha.
As well as the regulatory path, which can take literally 12 years, maybe longer.
IT doesn't allow that.
No.
So you're looking at this huge AI quote unquote bubble that's happening with data centers. We'll see what happens if it does burst or not. But
you can see where investors would say 10 years before I earn a single kilowatt penny.
Yeah.
Or 12 years. So that increases the cost of borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, there's a development of a supply chain for the components that go into either a small modular reactor or a regular AP1000 reactor.
Right.
So these things, they're all trade-offs. As Thomas Sowell used to say, there are no solutions, only trade-offs.
So when I was in the Board of Water Commissioners in Southington, we had to have a 100-year plan, a 50-year plan of supply.
Yeah.
Not that we could picture how many folks are going to join Southington or not, but as part of PURA, is there a role there where you guys are supposed to inform the legislators that say, hey, we need to have enough supply for this if this happens, so we need to make sure that we're regulating to the point where we can actually increase supply? Because clearly that doesn't seem to be happening, and we have all these inabilities and these bottlenecks that have been created. Does PURA have any role in saying, hey, by the way, we're short on some energy here. It's going to cost us a lot of money? Because least cost is
sort of, but FERC regulates the region, the New England region, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Mm-hmm.
We have a competitive generator market.
Mm-hmm.
Some people manufacture electricity. They send it down the transmission lines. FERC regulates that. When it comes into the states and it goes to the smaller lines you see outside your house, that's where we come in, or that's where the PURA comes in.
Gotcha.
I keep saying we.
I know.
It's hard habit to break. But that's the retail side, essentially, so wholesale versus resale. So FERC determines – well, they don't determine. Anybody can go into the ISO New England and make a proposal to be a generator.
Okay.
And they have to make the case that they'll pass an auction. They'll have an auction of when you can be constructed. It's usually 3 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And how many megawatts the ISO New England determines is going to be necessary for the highest demand day.
Gotcha.
Usually about 28,000 megawatts, maybe 29,000 megawatts for a single highest use day in a year.
It's like 6 or 7 days in July is about really all it is, right?
Yeah.
But yeah,
and we have the peaker plants in Connecticut.
They're just sitting there. They're just sitting there,
and they're paid to sit there just in case.
But we won't make Eversource get insured just in case. Sorry, I had to bring that back. We're going to take a quick break here, get to talk more with Michael Caron about Pura and energy. Yeah, I know it's a little off topic, but it isn't, because all of our computers run on energy. And we need to figure out why I can't even afford RAM and hard drives and energy and heat and cool. It's crazy. So we got to figure that out in Connecticut quick. We'll be right back.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bringing a data center online takes more than equipment. It takes precision. Graybar helps customers predict, stage, schedule, deliver, and verify every step of the build with critical products that are available now. From networking and wireless to critical power and testing tools, our teams help you reduce downtime risk and keep projects on track. Speed. Scale. Ready now. Yep. Graybar does that.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Identity Refreshing!
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
Let's go!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back, and we're talking with Michael Caron, former Pura commissioner, about electricity, and he talked about something that is, we talked about like peak demand a little bit and how there's like 6 or 7 days within the year that these power plants have to be available to fire up should there be a need, but then he mentioned something called zombie plants. You had an issue with zombie power plants, or the state did?
There had been, and it was more with the entire New England grid.
Really?
Because generators, the manufacturers of electricity,
right,
take part in an auction with ISO New England, and they pick the various generators who will be available on a given day to provide power on all days. And by the way, we don't say days, we say 8,760 hours in a year. So there's certain hours of the year.
Gotcha. You see it by hours.
So there are some, there's the baseload generation like Millstone, and then there's the ones that come on when necessary,
right?
When there's a higher demand expected for the day. A lot of times they're gas plants, and then there's things called peaker plants. Peaker plants are developed to be on standby in case we get to some of those hours, generally in the summer, when there's not enough generators, and so they'll be called upon. So they're paid to sit there and wait to be called upon,
right?
In the past, there had been some who were called upon during those days, and they didn't show up.
Mm.
So then you go down the line to the next one. And they tend to be more expensive
as they go up.
When you go down the line.
Yeah.
And so those would be called zombie plants.
The ones that didn't show up.
They didn't show up.
And so, there wasn't even a penalty before.
No one would have ever expected a guy said he could show up with a power plant ready to go and being paid pretty well for it and not show up. So that was addressed. But
there's not enough cynical people in this regulation. I would have assumed that. Guys like me would. I assumed the worst to start.
Right. And so one of the mechanisms that ISO New England does use is they have an internal market monitor and an external market monitor.
Yeah.
The internal market monitor follows things that go on within the ISO and as they determine who's generating what at what time. And the external monitor keeps an eye on the generators to make sure that no one games the system.
And now they get penalized if they do.
Yes.
And so I gave Michael a hard time. We pay these peak plants to not do anything until they're ready. They get a payment no matter what.
Yes. And that's called a capacity payment.
And they get paid for the energy when they do.
Yes, fire, exactly.
At a premium,
yeah.
So for some reason we've agreed that we're going to make sure we pay plants to sit there only when we might need them, and we were okay with having zombie plants. We weren't, but we were. But we won't make sure Eversource is insured for storms. Do you see the problem there?
Well, and again, I think we talked about this last time. There are different jurisdictions.
Yeah.
And so at the ISO New England, that's considered the wholesale electricity and manufacturing. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission manages to them,
gotcha.
and they have to answer them. When it comes down to the states, the PURAs, the PSCs take over from Rhode Island, Mass.
We did a little off the air. We talked a little bit about ISO. As far as I asked the question, is ISO helping us or hurting us? Right? Is it yet another bureaucratic fee on our bill? And what's your feeling on that, Michael?
No, I think they do a good job of coordinating the grid and making sure that there is enough power ready to when we need it, because the economic problem or if we had a rolling blackout, for instance, that would be fairly catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there's another regional transmission organization like ISO New England called PJM that covers from Lenox Seaboard out to Ohio, a little bit of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So they just had a what they call a backstop auction because they don't have enough generation for what could be a high peak day. And they were concerned about starting rolling blackouts. Mm-hmm. That would be disastrous for the economy of that PJM RTO.
Yeah. And so you talked about a non-bypassable and a bypassable federal charge on our bills that cover ISO?
Yes.
When can we bypass some of them? I don't mind.
Again, talk to FERC. A couple of influential senators in Washington. I think they could call them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the what's called the non-bypassable federally mandated congestion charges. You know, that's the thing where the renewable energy system programs are, various power purchase agreements, electric vehicle bonding, the hardship costs.
Yeah.
So there are a number of things in there, as well as all the renewable programs, Operation Fuel, for instance. Which is a worthy program.
Definitely.
And we want to fund that as best we can. So that comes out of is part of our bill, but it's a pass through, but it pays for the wholesale and manufacturing as well as the fuel charge.
Anything you want to talk about as we're ending our segment pretty soon here about PURA or your time on PURA, any topics that you've been burning in your mind for the past few months? Have you been communing with nature?
No, I mean, we've covered a lot, and energy is a fascinating business, but when you get into the weeds, it's pretty dry. And I was doing a public hearing once, and we were on CTN, and my wife was watching it for some reason, and she said, "How do you not stick a pen in your eye listening to this?" I'm like, "We're talking about depreciation schedules and IRA curves. It's the best part."
Yeah.
So,
well, we appreciate you doing it.
Cool.
Our audience wants to learn, and we appreciate you doing this with us. And the more we understand how this works, the more we might have a way to go to our legislators and say, "What are you doing to us? Let's get some fixes in here." But Michael Caron, we appreciate your time, sir.
Always a pleasure with you guys.
All right. Thanks. We want to thank you guys for listening as well. Without you guys talking or calling in, Dennis and I have been talking about my kids and his cats, so we appreciate that. I want to thank Carolyn for producing as always, and Mike G for posting everything over on our Facebook and X account. So have a great, safe 4th of July. We will be off next week.
And remember, we want you to be geeks too.
See you a week from next week.
A week from...
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.